Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
You like stories about haunted locations, or maybe tales of cryptids and spooky folklore from around the world? If so, why not tune in to Haunted Escapes with Chris and Diane, where all this and more will be discussed. New episodes drop every Sunday, the visual versions the following Friday on YouTube. So why not come join us on our Haunted Escapes?
Well, how are you now, Skip?
Ah, there you are now.
He's bleeding massive.
A fair play in all fairness.
Go tubbing.
Give a shot at you.
I'm allergic to this.
Relax the cocks.
Go way out of that.
Ah, oh, Jesus. Tis yourself.
Get that into you, Cynthia.
Hello there, how are you doing? Good to talk to you. Welcome back to another episode of Season 5 of Tis Yourself. My name is Nicola Barden, and if this is your first time ever coming to find this podcast, I suppose a little synopsis is I chat to some famous people about, I suppose, what they're best known for, how they got into fame, their journey throughout their career and their life that brought them up to this moment. Loads of stuff in between. We talk from this podcast has talked about everything from mental health to crazy celebrity stories to dating to everything in between. So we'll try and give you a little bit of an insight to your favorite celebrity that maybe you didn't know before. Now, if you are a regular listener, you'll be like, where have you been, Nicola, the last few weeks? You're halfway through a season and then just disappear. Oh, look at that. Loads of things happened. Loads of guests had to reschedule or cancel at the last minute. And it was just all so dramatic. And I was just having many, many, many mental breakdowns. But you don't want to hear about all about that. But one thing I did do that was really fun and was a reason why I was not here is because I got to go on a press trip to America. I went to California with a visit Greater Palm Springs and I got to go to spend the day in LA on my own at the end. So I decided, why don't I reach out to a couple of my guests and see if anyone's around. And if you look, if you follow me on Instagram, you'll know I got to meet up with Tate Donovan, who was my last guest on the podcast, and Dan Florek from Law & Order SVU. And can I just say, oh my gosh, they're so nice lads. First of all, they took time out of their day to come and meet me. Myself and Tate went for a coffee and he brought his lovely dog, Biggie, a rescue dog as well. And we went and had a coffee together. We got to chat about the pod, but we also were just chatting about like Hollywood life, Texas, LA, loads of stuff. And stuff obviously I can't repeat as well, but you know what? It was just like, he is a superstar. Like he was in Friends, he was in the OC, like he did Jennifer Aniston, Sandra Bullock, and he came and spent time with me, a little Irish girl from, Irish woman, I suppose I should call myself, all the way over from Ireland. And he came and we spent an hour together in the coffee shop and catching up out in the sunshine. It was just lovely. So I've told him the Guinness is on me whenever he comes over here, and let's hope that's soon. And then, of course, I went off and jumped in an Uber and I went off to meet Dan Florek, who brought his lovely wife, Karen, with him. And we just had the best time, the loveliest time. We went for Mexican food. We had margaritas, all of this, killing a few hours before my flight came. But they spent like 3 hours with me and Karen baked me chocolates. They brought me photos, signed photos. Lads, if you haven't seen the pictures over on Instagram or Twitter, go and check them out, because my heart bursts every time I see the pictures. Like, as a huge SVU fan, but also just like someone who is around celebrities and can see the bad side to some of them, to meet two wonderful human beings. And of course, Karen, obviously, sorry, I should say three wonderful human beings who gave up their time to hang out with me. Amazing. Amazing. If any of my guests are listening and want to ever hang out, I'm all for it. I'm just like, you are so amazing. Yes, I'm just so lucky. I'm so lucky at this podcast. And I'm so lucky today because my guest today, oh my God, Richie Sadlier. Very excited to talk to Richie. I had so many questions before I went into it and then we kind of just went off and talked about mental health for like an hour. So I actually And you know yourself, I've talked about this in the podcast before. I don't go in with a list of questions, like written down or anything like that. It's just a conversation. So whatever way the conversation goes is how I let it go. I don't go, oh, come here, let's go back to this, blah, blah, blah. It's all just let's see the way the wind takes us and what you want to talk about. So that's what we got chatting a lot about. We talked about football, obviously, as well. And yeah, it was really, really, really fascinating chat. Richie's doing some work with Chadwicks at the moment, which we'll talk about in it. It's about the construction industry, of course, and they are the buildings merchant. And basically how it's a male-dominated industry and therefore mental health discussions are very, very low on their priority list. And something like 85% of people in that industry don't think that their colleagues would be open about their mental health. It's 2024, we should be able to talk about it. And in a lot, maybe in your career, you can. But in the construction industry, there seems to be a lacking of that there. So he has launched this new campaign. It's called How's the Head? I'll let him explain it all for you. But go and check that out after the interview. Anyway, I've talked enough here in this intro. Let's get into it. Here's my chat with the lovely and fabulous Richie Sadlier.
Okay, how are you doing?
Good to talk to you.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Oh, no, I'm delighted to have you on. Like, I've been so fascinated with your story for so long. So, I have so many. If it's all right with you, I'm happy to just like jump straight in because I have so much I want to talk to you about. Like, I feel like I watched your Living with Lucy last year when it was on, and I feel like I learned a lot that I didn't know about Janet. Like, I knew obviously you'd played football, and I knew now you were doing like psychotherapy stuff, but like, you must, like, I didn't realise how young you were when you actually went over to England to play football.
Yeah, like, it's the nature of that job, really. Well, back then, especially, if you wanted to be a professional, your hopes were all abroad. There wasn't really a developed domestic league here. So, like, a lot of kids, my eyes was on, like, getting on a plane and going to the UK. So I was one of the ones that were lucky, of the people who had that ambition. I got to go when I was 17. So you kind of have to do a lot of growing up very quickly and adapting to an environment that you wouldn't normally find yourself in at the age of 17. So your family is at home in Dublin, you go off on your own and you're in it like an ultra competitive environment where everyone wants to get another contract, everyone wants to play in the same team, and lots of people comment on how you're doing in your job. So that's the nature of it, and you have to try and get your head around all of that and deal with it as a teenager or someone in their early 20s. So, but it's the most fun job. Like, if you're into football and you wanted to be a footballer and you get to be one, like, I do remember days where you'd wake up and go, life doesn't get better than this. Like, I'm rolling out of bed, walking 200 yards to play football for a few hours, and I come home then and have no other job. That's my job. Like, you go, this is a dream existence. So it's great.
Like, I'm just thinking back to when I was 17 and, you know, you had to fill in your CAO for your leaving cert or like for your college courses. And I remember thinking, like, I don't know what I want to do for the rest of my life. And like, but maybe then with football, I suppose it's a lot more glamorous than that. And also it's, in a way you're kind of going, well, I'll do this for a couple of years and see how I get on. And I don't have to worry about like the long future yet or whatever.
Yeah. So it was like, I do remember, go back to whatever the youngest age, like when you start falling in love with a sport or picking up a hobby or having dreams of what you'll be when you're an adult. My thing was always football. It was always just be a footballer. And there was never a phase where I wavered from that. But always in the back of your mind you're going, well, loads of people want this job. And of the countless people who want the job, there's only a tiny few actual jobs in that industry. So, like, plan Bs are important, like preparing for something else is usually wise. So I remember when I was offered a 2-year deal in the summer of fifth year by Millwall, and I said no because I stayed and did my leaving cert, because the advice I got at the time was you'd be better off going over with a leaving cert done than not. So why not do your leaving cert? So I waited a year and then went over. So it was always like, give everything to football, stay in it as long as I can, do as well as I can, but you always know your time limited. Even the most successful ones will have to say goodbye to it in their mid-late 30s. And most of the rest of us then, at some stage in your teenage life, you realise, okay, it's not going to be a job. I got as far as my mid-20s, and for injury reasons, I realised it's no longer going to be my job. So you kind of have to just lift your head up and look around and go, what else is there? And it turns out there was lots of other stuff. But at the time I was like, there's nothing there. There's nothing there for me. I'm only a footballer and now I can't play football. I'm a completely useless, pointless individual.
Yeah, like, I suppose it's kind of different now because, like, when you, like, if you're 17 now, you could be making your career, like, let's say you are a content creator or an influencer or whatever. You could be like, right, I'll do this for, you know, 20, 30 years, but I don't want to be doing that when I'm 50. So you could be starting it in your career and know it only has a longevity of whatever, 20, 10, 15, 20 years. Whereas back when you would have been playing football, it would have been one of the only careers that you knew you were going to be retired by the time you were 40.
At the time, yeah, like I was, like I went over on a 1 year contract and you're kind of told to 18 of you in the squad, maybe four will get a second contract, maybe. Mm. And of the four of you who'll get a second contract, maybe only one or two will actually get another one beyond that. So you're kind of told, lads, this is the landscape, this is the reality. But you're also told then on the back of it, make sure you're one of the four. Like, don't hear these statistics and be defeatist. Like, make sure that you know, give me the coach an impossible task to not give you a contract. So, but you're playing football. Like it's not like, it was a word like sacrifice or any of that really don't come into it because you're like going, I'm like, they're paying me to do this. I don't have to do a real job. And I go to home, I can go to bed for the afternoon, watch MTV for the afternoon. There was no phone. I sound like an old man when I start saying stuff like this. There was no mobile phones when I first went over. They existed. I just didn't have one. The internet wasn't in my life. Like, there was no social media, there was no phones. There was none of the things that can occupy the minds of young people now. So I went over and just focused on playing football. It's a nice, simple little life, doing the thing you love doing more than anything else. So you're thinking, this is great.
Does it get boring though? Like, because does it get to the point where you're like, oh yeah, because I know that in football it often can be training in the morning, then you have the afternoon off or whatever. So like you're playing in the morning, you might have a kick around with the lads that you are living with because they're kind of like your family over there. Because like you are away from your family and your friends, so you kind of do have to like cling to this new family, like your team become your new family.
That's actually a tricky bit because I was... So I was 17 when I went over and while I knew the chances of making it long term are slim, you kind of have to go all in. You have mm-hmm. to go all in as if I'm going to be one of the four, you know, to use those figures. And that does mean like you listen to lots of phone calls from your mates about going to college and having nights out and meeting people and getting in relationships and having parties and going on sessions and all that. And you kind of just have to realize, well, that's not for me now. Which is a hard thing to do when remember you're 17 or 18. I'm a grizzly old 45-year-old now, so I have the perspective to know that, you know, things don't change, things don't stay the same forever. Like when you're 17, things will change and your priorities shift and yada yada. But at the time, there was brief spells where you think, well, I don't think I'm going to make it. If you've any kind of self-doubt as a footballer, and I would have had a lot, you kind of go, well, maybe I'm wasting my time doing this. I don't mind doing this if I get the prize at the end of it, but it's pretty clear. You know, on the days where you just doubt yourself or just you're convinced you're no use or you're not up to it. Mm. You go, well, everything I'm doing now, there's going to be no payoff. So you start questioning, is this the right thing to do? But I never felt strong enough to ever walk away. I always was like, I'm going to stay in this as long as I can and go as high as I can or get as much enjoyment out of it as I can. And I was kind of lucky. Like I sometimes when I start talking about my career, I think sometimes people tilt their head and go, oh my God, that must have been so hard. You know, you got injured and you had to leave early and it's so much, you know, plans ahead of you. You didn't get to fulfill any of your dreams. And I kind of go now, I kind of go, well, I kind of did. Like I got to be a footballer for years. I got to play for Ireland. I've loads of really happy memories. I'm still on a WhatsApp group with all the lads I played with on the team 20, 25 years ago. And I feel lucky because the vast, vast majority of people don't get to be a professional footballer of those who want to be. And I did for 7 or 8 years. So, and it's kind of led on to loads of other really interesting things that I've done, which is kind of the biggest surprise. Because when I did finish, I remember thinking, like, I'm starting, like, there's a blank canvas here now. I've no experience that's relevant to the working world. I've no trade that I can use. My leaving cert, you know, not much use at this point. But I was wrong in all of those things. I've somehow managed to put it to some use in roles later on, right up to today.
Yeah, like, I actually think it's amazing that you can do that, because let's say the guys and girls who didn't make it, maybe when they were 17, 18, you know, they only got a year or two out of it. They're not that far off their peers in terms of uni or whatever, apprenticeships or anything like that. You might be like a year or two behind them, but, you know, you're in same kind of level as them in a way. But for you, like, you're starting at 27. And so, like, you have to figure out who you are and what you're interested in away from football. And, like, you know, your friends could be starting families, they could be going traveling, like, they've all done their uni thing and gotten their first jobs and stuff like that, and they are in a different, completely different path than you. Like, it can be exciting, obviously, to do that then, but it can also be really nerve-wracking for you to, like, completely start afresh. And of course, everybody knows you as Richie the footballer.
That was probably the trickiest thing, which I didn't grasp at the time. I think the formal word for this, like, identity. Mm-hmm. I only saw myself or considered myself to be a footballer, which is kind of a mad thing to say that you would tie yourself completely to a job, but that's all I did. Because it's the kind of job that if you have that job, it's how people will introduce you. It's what people will ask you about. People will give their, you know, their views on how well you're doing the job. But you're always a footballer, and you're never off work. Like you never. It's not like you go home at 5 o'clock and you clock off. You're always seen as a footballer, and the world interacts with you as a footballer. And you have to kind of make all your choices around your food and your sleep and your diet and your social choices around the fact that you are a footballer. So it's all consuming. And then I became a former footballer, and I really struggled with that, because it was like, there actually is nothing else really here. I'm not developed in any other way other than to be a footballer. I've never put any effort into anything else, never learned anything else, didn't want to do anything else. And I kind of genuinely for a while was like, I better say yes to anything that gets thrown my way, because very soon nothing is going to get thrown my way, because I'm a footballer who can't play football, so I'm useless. And that kind of got me into lots of kind of semi-interesting roles. I worked in a football agency for a little while. I worked at Millwall Academy, scouting teenagers for a while and younger players. And I started to do punditry and media work. To my big surprise, I kind of enjoyed it. It's not a role I thought I would enjoy. I wrote for the Sunday Independent for about a decade. And then I just started getting more invites back to RTE to talk about football. So I was like, this isn't bad at all. There is a bit of work out there. And then on the side, then I on the back of going to psychotherapy to help me retire, I just had a curiosity in what it would like be like to be a psychotherapist or to study it. And in my early 30s, I took the plunge and went back to college, and I'm now practicing therapy over a decade.
That's mad that, like, something that helped you is now your new chapter, and you're going to help other people as well.
Yeah.
I was just thinking while you were talking there, because you are seen as this former footballer.
It's like sometimes when I am watching a TV show and I see an actor, you know, from years and years ago, and I see an actor and I'm like, Jesus, what are they doing now? And like, Google them or whatever. And you realise they've quit the industry and they've gone off to work like in Tesco or, you know, wherever, and they don't do the job anymore. And you're like, why? Like, why would you give up that career? But not everyone can stay in it. Like, not everyone can be a footballer and last the whole long and then get the punditry career or manager or coach or whatever. Not everyone can be an actor forever. And yet here you are, and you've kept football as a job, as a career, doing the punditry work on RTE and stuff like that. Like, it's your side hustle, but your main job is something that actually helped you when you needed to be helped get out of football. Like, the thing that helped you is now your career. So who was it that suggested you do psychotherapy when you were leaving football?
No one really. It was, and even the notion of going to therapy wouldn't have been ever proposed or encouraged or even openly discussed back in 2003 when I finished. In the world of football, gone to counsellors, therapists, acknowledging even the term mental health, or even acknowledging you were a person before you were a footballer. That language just wasn't there at the time. So there was nobody in the world of football saying, you know what you should do? You should open up and get in touch with how you feel about this and maybe get help from someone to process all your really difficult emotions about this. It wasn't. It was like, go to the pub. You deserve it. Put your feet up. You know, it was that kind of thing. So off my own bat, then I kind of went because I knew I was really, really, really good at presenting myself to be okay in all situations. And for a long time after I finished, I wasn't okay. Mm-hmm. But going around doing all interviews, you know, trying to say the right things and using positive phrases. And I was kind of really, really, really struggling with the whole thing. So I went and organized a therapy session and it just worked. And like, I can't even describe now, and maybe I should, because I'm now a psychotherapist. Maybe I should have learned really fancy sentences to just keep trotting out about why therapy works and what's involved. But I started to go on a weekly, sometimes twice weekly basis, and it helped. It just helped to shift things, and it started to give me a place where I could practice just talking openly and honestly about what was going on, which is something I felt I couldn't do in the world of football or in the world of Millwall. And it just helped. And I remember at the time, by the time I went to college, which I was 31, living back in Dublin, I was doing some RT work. I was working writing with the Sunday Indo, but it was all very part-time stuff. I had loads of free time. And I remember thinking, the media stuff is, I'm enjoying it, but it's just not enough. It's just not enough. I have more time, I have a bit more energy, a bit more curiosity to see what more I could do with my time. And to my surprise, I really loved it. Like, I didn't mind going to college. I didn't mind the assignments, the presentations, the tests, all the stuff you do. But then in college, when we started to practice the one-on-one stuff, the actual sitting in the chair opposite somebody, then I was hooked. I was like, I love it in this chair. And then I started to practice then after I completed all my training. And it's a very difficult role to try and describe. Because everyone is different. I don't think there's like a uniform way of what it feels like to be a therapist or even to be a therapist or to do therapy. You kind of do it your own way. But it's a mixture of all sorts of things. Like you're kind of working out, am I going to make a connection with the person in front of me? Am I going to be able to help? What kind of help do they need? Is this a good fit? I remember at the time, I was like, I really want to be really good at this. I don't want to let anyone down. I want everyone to come to have a really positive experience and to be grateful they came and to be keen to come back. And of course, that's just not possible in this work. You don't click with every client you meet. Not everyone is going to be a fit with you. And for lots of reasons, people will come for one session and never come back. You kind of have to just to accept, oh, that's part of the work. And I love it. And then after a while, I just had some kind of a pull or a yearning to work with younger people. And then I ended up going back to college, doing another master's, this time in adolescent psychotherapy, and I flipped the focus of my practice to working with teenagers, to adolescents and their parents. So that's what I do now. So my working life is really, really varied. Like I'll I open my practice, and so next week I'll be my practice all day Monday. I'll be on the Champions League in RT on Tuesday. We're actually going away for a few days next week. The first flight with our young fella.
Oh my God, good luck.
He's 14 months, so we're going to take the plunge and put him on a plane and see how all that goes. But every week for me is different. I don't think I ever work in consecutive days doing the same job with the same people in the same location. There's loads of variety, which I really like. I love that. And of course, when you're working with people, like when you're working in therapy, there's so much variety. Like you never get two clients the same, two sessions the same. Every session is always really unique.
When you're saying about people like who don't click with certain therapists, like there are definitely people that go in
have a session with a person and they're like, this person is not for me, whatever it is about them, the room, the style of therapy or whatever, there's, you know, you're not always going to get it right on the first go. So do you like ever look back at your first psychotherapy session and the person that you went to and think that you, what if it had been a situation where you didn't get on with that person, you didn't enjoy that first session, would you have gone back? Because like, I imagine there's a lot of fronting on your part at that time. You're kind of plumosing your family and people around you to say, oh no, I'm grand, I'm happy to be back and happy to be not playing anymore, because you don't want to, you know, them feeling bad about you or whatever. Because if you had walked into that first session and it was such a big deal for you to be going there anyway to go to therapy and you didn't get on with that person, like you might not have gone back again for like to try again with another person.
Yeah, I've actually never given that. I never considered that. I'm just, because I know now that I've been working in it so long and I have had that experience. Like when you train to be a psychotherapist on the course that I did, like you have to complete a huge amount of hours of personal therapy yourself. You have to undergo therapy while training to be a therapist, so you've got to find a therapist. And I think I did four, I met with four different therapists before I found someone that I could go, okay, I found someone that I can click with. And there's no real logical reason why, like I could sit in front of you and you could be a therapist for years with all the loads of experience, fancy certificates in the wall, your room could be brilliantly kitted out and you could be highly recommended by other people who you did great work with, and I could sit in front of you and just for some random reason you could be like, oh no, you remind me of some other person that I have some issue with, and it there's some unconscious block there. Or some people like working with men, some people prefer working with women, age is a factor with some people, culture is a factor for other people. There's loads of reasons why two people can be in a room with each other and go, okay, there's going to be no second session here.
Mm.
But yeah, I was fortunate. The person I went to work with in my mid-20s, that I didn't have that. I was ready to throw myself into it, and she was someone that I worked really well with. But yeah, that's the nature of it. Like I often, like every week, I will, several times a week, I'll get a message from someone, whether it's on Instagram or someone in my own personal life, where they will be looking for a recommendation for a therapist.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of explain that to them. It's like, don't be disheartened if the person you meet isn't everything you want them to be. Sometimes a bit of patience is required and the relationship will build. Other times you make a decision that it's not for you, but you keep looking elsewhere. You don't just give up because you had one session that wasn't an absolute perfect fit. So the more I kind of talk about, that's why I like having chats like this and getting involved in mental health awareness campaigns, because it just, you just get the opportunity to talk normally about a lot of this stuff. And for a lot of people, men in particular, we don't talk about this stuff. We're like, we're terrible. Like, it's a very generalized statement and it's obviously a sexist statement, but for lots of really understandable reasons, there's a reluctance or an avoidance or an embarrassment or a discomfort or maybe an ignorance, and you just don't know how to start the conversation or where to go or what to do, or and so we just avoid it. It's just easier not to mention yourself or your mental health or how you're doing or how your head is. It's just easier not to mention it. But it's so beneficial, potentially like life-changing, if you can get to the point where you can start the conversation with someone and keep it going.
Yeah, because like as women, like generalization here, but as women, we do talk about pretty much everything with our friends and whoever we're close to. Like, I'm not saying all women, obviously, like there are women that hide things and keep things to themselves. But like we do, there is, you know, a basis on that, you know, the fact that we do actually talk about everything. Now, that obviously can be a good or bad thing, depending on what the subject is. But I do know that if I've got an issue, I can reach out to my female friends and it's not as big of a deal to reach out to them and say, listen, this is what I'm going through. And they're going to come back with a version of something they've been through similar, or how they know someone who's gone through whatever it is, depending on the subject. Or they'll listen to you, or they're more in touch with the emotions, maybe. Again, this is like a broad generalization, but you, as a woman, you know that you do have that circle there. Whereas I have male friends who, you know, they have this attitude of, it'll be grand or it's grand, don't worry about it, it'll be fine, you know. You know, they've gone through things throughout their lives and you try and talk to them about it and they're like, oh sure, it's grand, we moved on past that now or whatever. And it is harder to get them to open up as lads.
I know. And I see it all the time. Mm. Like, you don't have to work in mental health to have that observation, like that you just shared there. We see it all the time that it just seems to be a pattern or a recurring theme in so many men that it's easier just to kind of give a flippant response if someone asks you how you're doing. It's easy to tell yourself that no one wants to hear about your issues if you have issues, or it's easy to tell yourself that it's detrimental if I talk about this. I need to just shut up and get on with it. And the shut up and get on with it message is a kind of a message that a lot of young boys get and a lot of teenage lads get, and it's reinforced in the adult world as well for men. For loads of reasons. We could waffle on for ages about the cultural role of men or expectations around gender or all of that stuff, but it is a thing. Like, it is a thing that there some men will feel actively discouraged at some point in their life from opening up or from expressing emotion or talking honestly about a struggle if they have a struggle. So the shut up and get on with it message is planted early on in a lot of boys' heads, and that's what they think is the best approach. But I think it's changing. Like, it's changing loads. Like, I'm involved in conversations all the time that I imagine just wouldn't happen 20 or 30 years ago. Or campaigns that just are like talks in corporate settings or in schools or in work settings or in sports clubs particularly. And I think these stuff would never have been talked about when I played sport 20 years ago, or all male rooms or all male environments just wouldn't have brought up these topics years ago, but we are doing so now. But we need a bit of help. Like, we need a bit of a steer or a bit of guidance or someone just to put certain topics on the table to help get the thing going, get the ball rolling. Because while men are, I think, a little slower and a bit more reluctant to talk about struggles, there are a lot of men who are having struggles. There are a lot of men under a lot of pressure in a lot of areas of their life, and they have a lot of challenges and issues which are difficult to manage if you genuinely believe you should just shut up and get on with it. The kind of pushing back against those messages or that, just that idea that no one wants to hear about it, or you're going to be slagged about it, or, you know, you reveal yourself to be, you know, a little bit inadequate or a bit of a target for mockery or a bit of disrespect if you do talk openly about it. Like, that's not helpful anymore. I don't think it was ever helpful. It's certainly not helpful now.
Yeah, like, I definitely think young people are much better at it than we are. They're much more open to the conversation of mental health than people my age. Like, I'm in my late 30s, so like, it is a conversation that's been had, but I definitely think that we have different coping mechanisms. Like, I could take a week where I'll just keep a problem to myself before I'll open up about it when it just starts to get too much. But they are very much more open about things as they're happening. But I know you're doing some work with Chadwicks, and they had some mad stats in this week. So like, Chadwicks obviously is like a building merchant, and they are like, look, it's still a very male dominated industry, the construction industry. Maybe less so than previously, but it's still, you know, we'd say the vast majority of people in the construction industry are men. But like, I know they had some mad statistics on how people in the industry perceive mental health or like being open about their mental health with their colleagues. And maybe because it's like male dominated, that might be why they don't feel like they can open up. Like, I feel 2024, mental health is a lot more open than it ever has been. Everyone knows someone who's been through depression or anxiety. It's a conversation that's been had. And yes, you see these scary statistics from the likes of Chadwicks, that whole industry is like covering up their struggles because they don't feel like they can talk about them. And maybe that is because it's like considered a laddish career for a lot of people.
It's back to that thing, particularly in all male environments, which I remember I was in an all boys school. In the sports teams, male dominated. In the professional football club I was at, it's male dominated. And there just becomes this kind of unwritten way of behaving or acting. And it's true also in the construction industry, like the statistics I think from Chadwick's research, something like 85% of people, of tradespeople, figured that colleagues would be reluctant to talk. Like 85% is a whopper figure. Like that's huge. Like, so we're talking about a thing which is so dominant in that culture, in that world. So if you have 85% of people who genuinely believe that the colleagues are reluctant to talk about what's going on or reluctant to talk about their mental health, then I view that as, well, then that's a group of people who, there's a lot of vulnerability there, because there's no way in the world we can say the construction industry, unlike any others, is just the fact, it is just free of any concerns or issues or struggles. They're people yeah. like anyone else. But a statistic like that just reveals that they're people who are reluctant to come forward and talk about whatever it is they're going through. So like the campaign, the heading of it is like hell to head. And I think it's brilliant because that's a phrase lads use all the time.
Yeah.
This isn't introducing new vocabulary or new terms. It's like hell to head. And it's often used, I think, in the context of like, you know, after the weekend.
Yeah, yeah. Like, how's your hangover like?
Yeah, you know, how bad is your hangover kind of thing. But it's also an invitation to say, like, how are you getting on? And I think it's that, again, campaigns like this just help to normalize conversations. It doesn't have to be this big, serious thing where you kind of have to use very formal or kind of medical terms or therapeutic terms or, and you just, here's what's going on. Here's what I'm dealing with in my relationship. Here's the family thing that's going on. The contract situation is this. My personal health situation is that. Whatever it is you've got going on, when I ask you, how's your head? That's an opportunity to answer honestly about any of those things.
Yeah, because like, let's think about it. 100 people, right? There is absolutely no chance in any industry, what construction or any of them, that you could get 100 people in a room and all of them are perfectly happy. Like, oh yeah, every single one of us, not a one of us is going through a divorce and having a problem. Not one of us has just gotten broken up with, or, you know, has an addiction, or, you know, whatever it is. There's like every single one of us is delighted with life and loving our paths and where we're going at. Like, it's just so hard to think that we're this mental health journey that has come so far and we're in 2024 and there's still people who feel like they have to hide and be a broad idea of what a lad is or whatever that, you know, mentality is. Like, you'll know people that'll go, I know Tom is in a tough spot, so I took him for a pint. But like, did they actually talk at that pint? Like, or did they just sit there and talk about the football or whatever? Like, again, generalizations here. But like, do they actually talk about the issue? No, he took him out, and great that he has a pal that he knows like will be by his side. But like, they're not talking about the actual issue itself.
I had a day trip to England recently. Myself and two of my mates went, and we all have children, all have jobs, so getting to spend a lot of time with each other, like anyone, it's you don't get the opportunity. So we had this day, so I think we met at 8 a.m., flew to England, went to see a match, came home at 11 p.m. And at one point, my wife was talking to about 6 p.m. on the phone, and she said, "You must be great, like, you must have really caught up." And she mentioned that the partners are the children of the two lads, and she would say, "Oh, but you know now how they all are, and it must be good to catch up." And I got off the phone, and I said to the two lads, I think, Fiona there thinks we spent the day talking about our personal situation. Like, there was nothing mentioned whatsoever about ourselves, our relationships, our families, nothing. It's like we were there just to show up, have a bit of crack, watch a match. The lads had a couple of pints and we went home. And in loads of scenarios, that's absolutely fine.
Mm.
Like, that's a brilliant way to spend the day. But I know if those two lads, if I had anything going on, I could really comfortably and easily contact any of them and go, "Here, come on, meet me for a coffee, or go walk the dog, or we'll go to a match or whatever," and sit in the car on the way. If I have something to talk about, I'll mention it. I'll just bring it up. Because I kind of, for years, would have lived the shut up and get on with it way of life.
Yeah.
And it kind of didn't work for me at all. That will work brilliantly for somebody who has no issues or who has this really rare ability to manage any difficulty life throws at them all by themselves. Like, those people, I don't know if they exist, but I'm not one of them. So just chatting breezily, openly, comfortably to someone who I trust, who is sound, who I think might be able to listen or give me a dig out. I just do that all the time now. And because I do it so often, it never feels like a big thing. I'm not going around carrying any really heavy weight that I've been carrying for 6, 8, 10, 12 months, and I'm worried, how do I start the conversation? How do I bring it up? Who do I tell it to? I'm just comfortable chatting now.
Which, of course, is like a great place to be, that you are comfortable in that setting. Like, I understand that if people are in really bad mental health, often they don't want to talk. You know, if they're in a certain stage of their mental health journey, they don't want to talk. And just having someone there to sit with them, watch TV with them, you know, just to have a physical person there with them could be just the thing they need. They're not ready to open up. But on the other side of things, when you do open up, when you are ready, or when you do sometimes spill, it's such a relief. Like, I'm thinking of my own self when I'm talking, you know, there's been times where I haven't told people and I'm like, I don't want to bother people, they've got stuff going on or whatever, my problems don't seem as big, and then I tell my friends, eventually like it gets so annoying that I blurt it out in WhatsApp or whatever, and they're like, why didn't you tell me? Oh my god, last week I had the same thing, and then we're giving out to each other, why didn't you tell me, and blah blah blah. But like, the actual physical relief of unloading, it suddenly doesn't seem as big of a problem, and someone's helping you out by going, oh my god, I've been through that as well.
And I think one of the things that it is something that a lot of will make this a bit more appealing to men in particular is, you can sometimes help you with the solution, that like this practical benefit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so we myself and my wife have talked about this publicly. We had a lot of difficulty getting pregnant. We were told we wouldn't be able to get pregnant naturally, so we had to go into the world of IVF. I knew nothing about it at all, but when I started to talk to mates about the situation we were in, and Fiona did too, we were just given practical tips on where to go. People shared their experience of what they do differently at their time again, and helped us to know what to look out for. If you talk to someone about, Jesus, I want to go to therapy, but I don't know where to start, and the person you've said it to is in therapy or has been, you can get practical guidance on how you might go about it. So it kind of sounds really simple and really common sense. But like, once you share an issue, a dilemma, a concern, a question that you have to anyone, then you can avail of whatever experience they have in that area too. And sometimes it's not really complicated stuff. It's like, you know, here's the issue I have. And you go, oh, I had that too. Here's what I did. Or my brother went through the same thing. Here's what he did. Here's his number. Off you go. Or here's some resources. Or here's the certain support groups that are out there. Here's a doctor that is really good on this topic. Here's a therapist that was excellent on that. Here's a men's group that I know cover this topic a lot. Or here's a website. Or here's someone to follow on Instagram who talks openly. Or here's someone on social media that I know will respond to you if you send them a private message about this issue. They're great. Like, so there's a lot of practical responses and information you can get when you put your kind of story on the table to someone you trust. So it just is better than the trying to carry it alone, deny that it's an issue, try and solve it yourself, or hope it goes away. They're not great strategies at all.
Well, let's just take like IVF, for example, what you were saying there. If you put that into Google, IVF Dublin, you're getting so many thousands of results. You're getting 5 different clinics. You're getting 50 articles about people who've spoken to the media about it before, about their journey with IVF. You might not get the practical advice you need straight away. Like, you might take a bit of digging, it might take a lot of research, but you also don't get the, I suppose, personalization of it all. You know, going to your friend who's been through the same journey, or someone you know, you're going to hear about the practical side of things as well. You know, okay, you're going to be on a waiting list for 6 weeks. Or you'll get an appointment tomorrow. You'll hear what the doctor needs from you before you go in there. All that kind of stuff that's a lot more practical. Like, all of us probably know someone who's had a fertility issue. They might be not willing to share it with the world, but they're probably, if they know that you need to find information, they are willing and happy to share that with them, with you, and with somebody going through it. And I'd say that is a lot more, you get a lot more information from person one-on-one that's specific to you, as opposed to just sticking it into Google. Like, I'm sure if you're in a situation like that, it's overwhelming, and trying to get information is overwhelming. So being able to sit down with somebody or ring them and say, listen, can you just tell me what I need to know? It's so much quicker, first of all. If we're thinking about practical sides, it's quicker. And second of all, it'll tell you only what you need to know.
Yeah, like, this isn't high level stuff. like what we're talking about here isn't very complicated. You don't have to go to college for years to grasp that what we're saying here is that it's potentially really beneficial. Tell the person next to you what you're going through because they might be able to help. Whether it's practical tips or share their experience or point you in the right direction, they might be able to support you themselves. They'll signpost you to another support, or you might just feel better for having said it.
Yeah.
Because you might hear the person next to you go, do you know what? I know what that's like because I used to be like that too. Or I get days where I think exactly the same thing. So I often, in whatever scenarios I was in over the years, whether it was trying to grapple with becoming a former footballer, trying to get off the drink and stay sober, trying to learn how to be a therapist when you haven't a clue what's involved, trying to find my feet on the RT panel with people who have way more experience and better in it than I was. All whatever area I've been in, it was always helpful to speak to someone who'd been on that path before me. It just was, because they just go, yeah, I know what that's like. Yeah, and when someone just says, yeah, like me too, yeah, and I know why you would feel that because I used to feel that too. There's something reassuring. There's something comforting. They're going, all right. So how I feel, it might be difficult, but it sounds like it's normal and understandable that I would feel this way given the situation I find myself in. And even learning that can be really helpful. But you don't learn it if your issue becomes just an internal monologue and no other voices are involved in the conversation, because a lot of us, myself, absolutely myself included, have a kind of a head that if left alone can come up with all sorts of difficulties and challenges and can make things seem overwhelmingly difficult when often they're not.
Oh, that's me 100%. I have such an overactive brain that as soon as I wake up, my brain is already starting to think about, you know, different, it's like thoughts. So many times, especially like certain times of the month, if you are a woman, I'll start like getting into a row with somebody in my head. Like I'll be like, oh, she hasn't texted me in like 3 weeks. Like, oh, what a bitch. And then I'll be having an argument and planning out what I'm going to say in this argument. But then I'll talk to the person and they have something else going on and it's completely gone. So like if I'd left those thoughts internally, if I listened to my brain the whole time, Jesus Christ, I'd be fighting with everybody and I'd be thinking awful things about myself. But yeah, if I like listen to my brain the whole time, I'd be like, why am I fighting with this person? Like just in my brain.
Exactly. Like we're all like, our heads are kind of weird and wonderful places.
Mm-hmm.
And sharing regularly or occasionally with someone else what's actually going on in it is helpful. It's just better. So yeah, all this how's the head stuff and talking normally and breezily and encouraging other people to talk normally and breezily about what's going on. I think that's worth doing.
And like, I know it's your job, right? And you do a lot of work, obviously, with psychotherapy in your own practice, but also like on TV and stuff with the show you had last year with RTE on the sex education system. And obviously as well, like with stuff with Chadwicks at the minute, you know, so it is your job. But I imagine you must get like loads of DMs and loads of emails and loads of messages from people, young and old, all ages, who are reaching out to you for help or, you know, advice or whatever. You must get to a point where you have to take a step back, not be burnt out. Like you must have, do you have to take some time away from all of this because it can get too much?
Constantly. The whole area of self-care and burnout and boundaries, I think is the formal term, where you have to maintain a space just for yourself. Mm-hmm. And I find that a challenge because of the nature of the work I do with the young clients I see in my practice, mm-hmm. I find it next to impossible for them not to come into my head regularly between sessions. I don't have to be in front of them or with them to think about them. But it's not helpful to think about them when I'm sitting on the RT panel live on telly talking about Real Madrid. Nor is it helpful to be thinking about them if I've my little baby in my hand and he's a dirty arse and he needs a new nappy. Do you know what I mean? So I have to really try and stay as focused on what I'm doing in the moment. I find that's the most effective way for me to manage all the different kind of strands of my week. Because there are times if I take my eye off the ball and I regularly do it, all of a sudden I'll find myself in a day of my head and my hands going, I'm exhausted here. How has this happened again? And I kind of then gently start reprimanding myself, going, you know too much. You've learned too much about, you know, the importance of self-care. You know the importance of work-life balance, that phrase. You know all this stuff. Why are you yet again exhausted and knackered? And I have to then remind myself, okay, right, you're just doing too much. Because I want to see my son all the time. And I want to be around my wife all the time. And I have a load of work that I really think is important. And I want to watch matches so that I'm a better pundit. And I want to see my friends because I don't want to be just isolated from my friends because I don't want that to happen. I want to try and stay fit, so I need to go to the gym. I go to meetings every week to keep myself sober. I go to therapy every Friday morning. There's loads of things I want to do, and it feels like you're kind of trying to spin about 18 plates at one time. And often I get the balance wrong. Mm-hmm. But that's just the nature of it. I keep an eye on it as best I can. And I try and, like, I'm go back to what I said earlier. Like, when I left football, I thought, I have no job and I have no prospects. And the misery that I was feeling back then is going to be how I'm going to feel forever. Because the thing that's making me miserable can't be undone. This is it from now on. Am I not feeling like that at all now? Like, I've loads of different random things I do that I love doing. And I don't get bored by any of them. None of them feel like a slog. I pretty much look for every time I go to work, and I know this is a really rare thing to say, I really look forward to getting there. Mm-hmm. Because the things I do, I don't really consider them work, you know, as in something you're doing because you feel obliged to do it, you have to do it, you know, because everyone needs the job. I'm lucky that the things I do are things that I genuinely love doing. And that's really rare. I know how rare that is.
Yeah, but it's been a journey. Like, you know, whatever about football, and that came to you when you were 17, so it might seem different, but psychotherapy is something that you didn't even know you wanted to do. It came to you because you benefited from it. And then it's not like, again, it's not handed to you. It's not a talent. You have to go and study it. You have to go back to college. You have to go back as a mature student, and you're probably in half the class is probably like 18. You're like, hey, yeah.
Actually, in the field of psychotherapy, I said earlier, Chadwick's is a male, or the construction or trade industry can tend to be male dominated. The world of psychotherapy, in my experience, any courses I do, any workshops I attend, it kind of is 70 to 80% female, generally. Mm-hmm. Which weirdly, took a bit of getting used to as well, because I was never in a classroom with a female in my whole mm-hmm. life until I went to college. And it is, like, it is. I know I'm kind of sitting there going, I'm lucky and I'm grateful that I get to do what I do today, but there was a long and winding road to get here. And there were lots of really difficult stops along the way. But things are really good today, honestly. I don't have a thing to, like, our baby's the healthiest, smiliest little fella. Life is good.
But isn't it brilliant that you're in that place now, though? Because if you think about it, like, you've been through so much in your life, whether it's, you know, losing your career early in your life. Of course, you've been through the IVF. You've given up alcohol and now you're sober. You know, you've gone through the roller coaster of life and now you're in quite a happy place. And also, you've turned out to be a role model for people in so many different angles. Like, one person might not relate to the football side of things, you know, maybe they've been in the career their whole life or, you know, that kind of stuff, but they might relate to the IVF issue. And then somebody else might, you know, have no inkling of that, but might relate to the sobriety and giving up alcohol side of things. So, like, you actually unintentionally are helping people with your life story in loads of different ways.
So go back to when I was a footballer. If I met someone on the street or someone came up to say hello, the conversation would be football. But now, just like what you said there, The messages or emails or conversations I'll have with people could be anything. Could be porn, sex, drink, drugs, football, mental health, therapy, pregnancy, parenthood. It's kind of anything and everything. So my working life is as varied as the kind of social conversations I have now. I used to be the football guy off telly. But now because of the randomness or a variety of the different things I've been involved in, I could end up having a conversation about anything at this stage.
Yeah, I see lads coming towards him now. Some 45-year-old lad walks up to you in the street and you're like, oh, he's about to talk to me about the, you know, Villa game from the weekend or whatever, or the Champions League. And then he comes up to you and he's like, man, I give up the drink as well. How are you finding it or whatever? Or he's like, oh, me and the missus are going through the same thing with IVF. I saw, you know, your story. Like 20 years ago, if they were stopping you in the street, they're probably like talking to you about something that you did on the pitch.
I know. It's but it's great. Like, and again, I suppose this whole chat is about like encouraging conversations about your well-being, how you're doing, your life, your mental health, whatever it is. But I do need that huge changes have happened. Like I said, those conversations or a lot of the things I'm involved in now, they just wouldn't have existed years ago. They just wouldn't. And I think it's taken, like, whether it's a lot of men coming out and openly talking about stuff they've gone through, or people in prominent positions going through things quite publicly, that we've kind of chipped away or kind of smashed that idea that men are just people who provide for others, or that if they keep others safe or protected, that's not all they are. That's not all they're for. A load of lads are in need of support. A load of lads are kind of struggling to find answers to certain questions in their life. And a lot of them maybe don't have the background or the wherewithal to come forward and say that to someone, which makes them really, 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 really vulnerable. So the more we chip away at that shut up and get on with it kind of attitude, I think the better.
I think, yeah, a lot of that is driving from our young people as well. Like, you probably know that yourself in this industry. Like, I was talking to a woman I know recently. She has a 16-year-old young fella, I think he is. And he's mad about gas, loves it, wants to play county the whole lot. And she was saying they'd won some club title or whatever. And that basically she was saying to me how they were having celebrations. And, you know, she said he probably I was saying, oh, he probably had a couple of drinks. And she's like, oh, no, no, he doesn't drink. And I was kind of thinking, oh, yeah, he doesn't drink. You know, he's saying that to his mom, like, or whatever, you know. But it turns out, like, she was explaining to me that, no, he just has no interest in it. And, like, fitness is, you know, the main thing for him, and getting fit and all this kind of, and, you know, young people as well, with appearance and everything. There's this whole world out there now where 20 years ago, if you said, I'm not drinking or I don't drink, you know, there was, if you're a woman, you were asked if you're pregnant, and lads would be like, what is wrong with you? You know, that kind of way. And I'm sure when you initially became sober, you probably would even say it's different to that today. Like, you know, now there is a whole world with, whether it's non-alcoholic 0.0 drinks or whatever, there's a whole world. Like, no one really questions if you're not drinking anymore. Like, it's, you can go out and be sober, like, all the time. That's completely different to when we were growing up.
Like, I would have stopped. I had my last drink in 2011 and I was 32 at the time. And I remember thinking that question, like, why aren't you drinking? Or why are you having a sparkling water is going to be the question I'll hear every time I'm out ever again. And I thought, this is going to be like no crack. And all I'm going to get is probing questions. They're a bit at stake as to, like, why did you arrive here in your car? Why aren't you getting drunk? And the truth is that no one really cares. Like, do you know what? Like, I think we can tell ourselves that our choices are really important to other people, or that we've really got to fit in, or we've really got to act the same way or do the same thing as the people next to us, or we'll be rejected or thrown out of the group if we don't. Like, that, none of that's true at all. It hasn't been in my experience. I stopped drinking and I'm delighted I am drinking today. I'm not hungover today from drinking yesterday. I have no intention to drink tonight or tomorrow. And it's nice and simple for me now, but it is really, really common to be in the company of people who, for their own reasons, don't drink.
Yeah.
And who don't get sick for not drinking. And again, that's a shift as well.
Yeah, like what you were saying there, that, you know, when you were like, oh, everyone's going to be quizzing me and it's going to become this really big thing that I'm not drinking. We all think our little problem is this huge thing and that it's going to affect everybody. And, like,
we all do that.
We all do. Like, we all think that our problem, like, I'm the only person going through this right now. You know what I mean? No one can understand what it's like because I'm going through this.
And it's especially, you're liable to be thinking that if maybe you're in a social group where talking about, I'm going to keep using the word problems. Like, not everything's a problem. It'll just be just a thing you've got going on in your life. But if you and your three mates or the group of four years, if it's not the dumb thing to talk about what's going on in your life, when you have something, you can very quickly tell yourself, oh, Jesus, I'm not doing life right here. The others aren't dealing with this. No one's ever mentioned this. No one's gone through with this. It's just me. And because it's just me, they're not going to understand. So there's no point in me talking to them about it because they certainly won't be able to help. And they'll probably slag me. But if you're in a kind of group where you just, it's just normal to talk about whatever, doesn't matter, whatever.
Yeah.
Financial stuff, issues with drugs, your relationship to your whatever partner you have or your hopes or dreams in whatever area, it doesn't matter. Well, you just normally talk about the stuff that's going on in your life. And then it's not this big, big, big thing. Anyway, quickly realized that we all have stuff going on.
Yeah.
We all do. And something that's a benefit with talking about it is, particularly for lads, I think they this bit resonates with a lot of men, is you can get practical guidance on what the hell to do.
Yeah, you want to find a fix. And like, lads love finding a fix. So this is like your mental toolbox, you know, trying to find what's the problem and trying to fix it. And I think like having role models like yourself, like people who are not afraid to have these conversations and be open about them, but like not in a like condescending way, like not in a, oh, we should all just not talk about it. Just open up like, and just, you know, that kind of way.
I think people switch off. If you start like really pushing that really strongly, I think people will quickly start turning. Like there's a lot of people, and I said it a few times in this chat, like for family reasons or personality reasons or cultural reasons or the area they're from or the industry they're in, there's loads of really legitimate reasons why somebody might not feel like they're equipped to talk or that they should talk or that they can't talk. And you've got to be really understanding of that. There's nobody in me coming along and going, no, you've got to go home and tell your partner. If your partner is really, really a judgmental person, doesn't listen, will criticise, has done nothing but mock people who've ever said they've gone to therapy, well then don't talk to your partner. They're not the person to talk to. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? There are loads of scenarios where it's not actually sensible or common sense or wise to talk openly to the person next to you or to the setting you're in. But there are settings where it is appropriate and there are people that it is kind of appropriate and useful and potentially beneficial and helpful to speak to. Like, don't be going on first dates and banging out all your problems. Like, that's just not common sense. Don't go and sit in a football dressing room after a match and open up about the really personal thing.
Mm-hmm.
Or sit around in the work canteen and talk about the thing you don't want anyone to know about.
Yeah.
Like, there's a bit of kind of boxing clever here and common sense. But finding someone that may listen, that may help, that may kind of lighten your load a little bit, it's worth kind of teasing out in your head. Who is that someone in my life? Because carrying things alone, that can be tricky. It just can be.
Yeah. And like, if you do pick the wrong person, say you open up to somebody and they're like, sure, there's nothing wrong with you or whatever, you know, or they give you a negative experience, learn from that and find someone else who you know is going to be more receptive. Like, that person might be normally great, but they might be going through something themselves, or, you know, or maybe they're just terrible, but there is going to be someone that is going to be able to help you.
Hmm.
Ready to be available.
I had one experience of that years ago when I was, I didn't allow myself when I was coming close to retiring, I didn't allow myself to tell anyone I was fearful of retiring because I thought that sounded defeatist and negative. But one day I told my agent, I said, listen, I'm really struggling. I'll be honest with you. I've missed all the deadlines that the surgeon has given me. I'm kind of lying to the physio about how much pain I'm in. And I'm starting to kind of think that this might end badly for me quite soon. And I got off the phone and I think I felt better for having said it to somebody and I trusted him. He rang the club chairman and told him what I said. The chairman rang the manager and the manager brought me in the office the next day and kind of gave me a bollocking. But listen, you talking like that isn't going to get you fit. We need you fit. Get in the gym and get fit. Don't, like, you know, positive mental attitude kind of,
yeah,
a message is what I got. But the message that I heard was, shut up and get on with it.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, oh yeah, right, yeah. This is the world telling me again that it's a bad idea to talk about something you're worried about because somebody will just tell you you've done wrong by even talking about it. Whereas the lesson I really learned over time was to choose wisely about who you talk to.
Yeah, choose the right person. Like, we've all had somebody that we might have told, you know, a problem to, and they've just replied with something like, "What's be wrong with you? You've a great life," or something like that. what problems do you have? Like, that attitude is not helpful. But that just teaches you that they're not the right person that you need to be around when you need a safe circle. They're not in it. It doesn't have to be your best friend. It doesn't have to be. It could be a cousin. It could be someone that you are close to at work, or it could be a therapist. Like, find someone that you can speak openly with without judgment.
Yeah. And I think the first step in that process is just acknowledging that it's worth doing something.
Yeah.
Like, doing nothing just sounds like a daft way to handle a scenario which you're finding difficult. But doing something is worth exploring. What that is then is up to you. Who you speak to, what you say, what word you use, in what venue. That's entirely unique depending on the situation, but better doing something than nothing.
Yeah. And like, you could have done nothing back in the day and then you wouldn't be where you are now. You wouldn't be studying psychotherapy. You wouldn't be, you know, that wouldn't be your job. You wouldn't be on the RT panel fighting with like Damien Duff or whoever's on the panel with you.
Exactly. Exactly.
We'll make you the new Eamon and John.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that, Lynn. But yeah, no, things are good today.
Well, like, I could sit here all day with you and talk mental health and like what we can do and what we need to do and all that. But obviously you have a life and a very, very busy one. But thank you so much for like chatting to me. Like, this has been a great conversation, and hopefully like the right person who needs to hear it will hear it and know that there's nothing wrong with going and getting some help or talking to a different person that, you know, that you need to talk to. So I really appreciate you giving me so much of your time.
Thanks a million. Cheers, Nicola.
All right.
Really enjoyed it.
Now, wasn't that a great chat? As you can hear there, I had loads of ideas. I was like, we'll probably talk about football for so long, and I'll talk to him about like being a dad and stuff. And we just got like in deep into conversations there. And I'm so blessed that he gave me so much of his time. Very, very busy man. So I really appreciate it. It was a really big, weird week for me in football wise, because I also met Niall Quinn. Not for the podcast, but I met him in my other job. And I was like, Jesus, I'm meeting all the greats now. I'm like, Roy Keane, give us a call. I know you're listening. If you are interested in hearing more about Richie's campaign, House Ahead, go to chadwicks.ie and it's on there. And they are donating €1 of every PPE sold in the Chadwick stores all for April. That's going to the mental health charity Aware. So €1 of that is going. So every time you buy, like, I don't know, goggles and boots and stuff like that, €1 is going to mental health charity. So look, the things you get for work can actually be helping someone who is struggling. And we know how important it is to get help. So if you do need help, aware.ie, we have all the details on it. And always joe@samaritans.org is the email if you want to go through that way, or they have a text chat. So just go on to samaritans.org and there's loads of information there. Two great charities, and I would definitely promote them. I will be back soon, guys. I'm not going to take a 7-week break or whatever like I did. But I hope you enjoyed this. I put this up on Instagram the other day, actually, and I wonder, will anyone follow through? So basically, I had my goals for the year, and two of my goals were, one of them is to reach 30,000 downloads, which I'm about 600 listens away from. So I'm like, can we do it this weekend, please? And also on Spotify, I wanted to get 70 ratings. So I'm on 68. So I just need two more. Two of you kind people just to go on and give me a rating on Spotify. If you're listening on Apple, I haven't had a review or rating in 2024. The last one was in December 2023. So if you could go on and give me a 5-star and just say like your favorite episode or something like that. Actually, if you go on and say your favorite Irish word or your favorite Irish phrase, let's make that the thing you do. So go on to Apple and leave your favorite Irish phrase or word with a review, and I love it. I'll call it out on a future episode. Also, if you are bored and scrolling on Spotify, they let me do Q&As and polls now. So you'll see on this episode, there will be one. But also, if you go to any of the other ones, whether you listen to them or not, there'll be either Q&A or a question box. So like, they take no time whatsoever, and they are brilliant for the algorithm. It means more people hear this episode, more people hear this podcast. And as you know, I don't have a big team. I don't have anyone else working on this with me. So every single time, just take note of this, that you share an episode, I get at least 2 new listens. Okay. I'll probably get a follow, whether it's on Instagram or whatever. So please, 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 please share, put it in your WhatsApp groups, put it in your Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, whatever it is, and all those ratings and polls and stuff, they all just drive it up the traffic. So anyway,
I love you all. I hope you're all having a great weekend and look after yourselves, and I'll talk to you soon. Slán go fóill.
I'm Rory J. McCormick, host of Propensity, a true crime anthology podcast. Join me this season as I cover cases of abduction, captivity, and confinement. Propensity is a narrative-driven, solo-hosted podcast that deep dives into cases to give you all the facts, always centering the victims and survivors of some of the most harrowing cases you can imagine. Compelling stories, compassionately told. Listen to Propensity, a true crime anthology podcast, now available wherever you get podcasts.